Sure, what's this about, brother?
We got a situation up in Delaware that's crazy right now, brother. Brothers are being lynched.
Oh, lynched? In 2012?
That's the same exact thing we said when we got the story.
So how'd you hear about it?
That's a good question. You know, there was a professor who was at Delaware State University named Dr. Jahi Issa. And to make a long story short, he was doing some research and educating the students on how they're trying to destroy and demolish HBCUs.
Oh, I went to Bowie State.
I went to Hampton University, so you know how the students were responding to that. And in the midst of sharing this information with the students, he stumbled upon the fact that they were actually lynching brothers in Dover, Delaware.
How come I didn't hear about this on CNN?
You didn't hear about it on CNN because this is an election year. Do you know who the state's attorney is for the state of Delaware?
Who would that be?
That would be Bo Biden. Bo Biden is the Vice President Joe Biden's son. So as you can see, this is an extremely political situation.
Understood. So what do you have to do with this?
We represent an organization called War on the Horizon. And what we do is we educate black people to the threat of white supremacy and teach our people how we can prepare for black survival.
No doubt. Much needed. Definitely going to check this out. Thank you, brother.
Appreciate you, bro. Be safe out there, all right?
All right. Got it.
Hey, brother, did you try that new restaurant down the street?
Yeah, I went there yesterday. Man, the food was off the chain. And the chicken was like, how they be saying that? Like, to die for.
Whoa.
To die for. I mean, the chicken was good. You know what I'm saying?
Can't you just say the chicken was good? Does it have to be to die for? That sounds a little effeminate.
Did you wear skinny jeans while you were eating the chicken?
Nah, I'm saying, I would say it was good, man.
Was it rainbow chicken?
Hold up, man. I just like the chicken was good.
With a sparkly buckle on like
this. Was it serving on a sissy bounce?
Man, I'm just saying, the chicken was good. Look, man, the chicken was good, no homo.
No, time has passed for no homo.
You're supposed to say it before, brother.
It's like a disclaimer.
I can't say, I just said no homo, though. There's no regulation on when you can say no homo. What are y'all, like a regulatory governing body over no homo or something?
Brothers and sisters, don't get caught up. Don't let the homosexual poltergeist pull you in. We are the final front in the war against white sex. Stand strong. This African service announcement has been brought to you by War on the Horizon Radio.
War on the Horizon. You gotta love it.
No.
Peace, and welcome to the Message to the Black Fam show here on War on the Horizon. I am your host, Sister Lady Shabazz. And I have definitely got a treat in store for you today. This is going to be a little different than most of the shows we usually do, a little different subject matter, but sometimes it's good to lighten things up a little bit. My guest today is actually a very good friend of mine. I'm usually pretty familiar with most of my guests, but this is a very, very special brother. I met him actually when I first moved up to Detroit. I didn't know too many people, didn't know where the hot spots were or anything like that. And one of our mutual friends had posted that there was going to be a free lecture in a place called 90s in Highland Park. It's actually called 90s Knowledge Cafe. And it's a real cool place. It's like a combination of a bookstore and a cafe. You can go and get your fried fish or your veggie burger. She puts a little bit of jerk sauce on it and hooks it up for you. So it's a real cool place. You can go there and get Brother Baruti's books and just all kinds of things. So I said, well, it's free. I might as well go see what it's about, see what they have going on in Detroit. And the lecture series actually covered a lot of things. I think he had one on superheroes, and he had some that were a little bit more into metaphysics. And I dabble in metaphysics, but I don't get carried away with it just because I see so many people who are into metaphysics. And they start to, I mean, you're almost waiting to see them levitate because they get real spacey with it. So I was like, well, we'll check the brother out and see what he has going on. And so I went and I was very impressed because the brother not only talked about some metaphysics, but also related it to us and how it came from Kemet and how it's being used against us by the powers that be, and how we can start to take back some of those secrets that are actually our culture and our history. So to me, in my mind, it almost sounded like another way of warfare. I mean, of course, you have physical battles, and then you have your health and making sure you're fit, you know, because they kill us that way. You know, they're coming at us in all different ways, really making us powerless. So I said, hey, the more warfare strategies we can gather, the better. But the lecture that stood out the most, mostly because my husband is a big superhero fan, was the one that he did on superheroes. And not only did he touch on superheroes and how they originated and commit and how they're really our story, he also related that to the power within us, that this is our story. And, you know, the same powers that these stories are based on are actually our powers. And all we need to do is start manifesting those powers, and we can do a lot more than we are and be a lot greater than we realize that we can be. So I definitely enjoyed that lecture series. And actually, he's been doing the lecture series for quite a while now. I had the pleasure to attend it again this year. I don't know if you listened to the show over the fall, but I kind of gave it a shout out and said, if you're in the area, come see me at 90s. So definitely something that I enjoy, and I'm sure that you will too. Another little known fact about this brother, because a lot of people who have been buying my ebook online, God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man, have said, wow, you know, I really, really like that cover. Did you do that yourself? And I was like, no. I did try to make the cover by myself, and it looked like a two-year-old did it. It was probably the equivalent of somebody drawing a stick figure and trying to pass it off as professional. So after I failed miserably, I said, you know what? I know my good brother Keith is actually a graphic designer, so let me see if he can hook it up. So, you know, we talked about the concept back and forth. I found, you know, gave him a picture that I thought really captured the book, and just a, you know, a couple hours later, I had a book cover. It was really easy. He was really talented. So anybody that has seen my book and really like it, you can thank this brother for the cover. I had nothing to do with that, or very little to do with that. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and bring our brother on the line. Brother Keith, are you there?
Yeah, Peace. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Peace. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm wonderful. Is there anything that you'd like to tell anybody about yourself? Did I miss anything?
Oh, no, that was an awesome intro. I don't know if I can say anything else. I mean, that was great. I really appreciate that.
Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate you, definitely. All of the lectures that you've given me have really helped me out, given me some tools that I've used actually to improve my life. So, no, thank you, definitely. I guess we can get right into it. I know this is something that's going to be interesting for a lot of people, because a lot of us have, you know, a little rudimentary knowledge in Asara Set and Haru. But that's pretty much as far as it goes. We really don't know how, you know, the media has used these images, you know, to promote white supremacy, or how it even relates, you know, that this is actually, these are our stories, not their stories. And that's something that I really enjoyed you explaining. Can you get a little bit into our story and how it was taken and kind of morphed into something else?
Sure. Well, first of all, what happened when I started studying ancient African history, or just African history period, was I started to see these correspondences. I started to see how a lot of the stories and the history that I was reading from Africa actually sounded familiar. I started to see some relationships between things that I knew or had heard growing up in the form of stories, and the things that I was learning about our ancient African history. And the major attack that comes for our people is that there's this saying that you can't achieve what you can't imagine yourself to be. And I'm paraphrasing, but that is one of those things that when I grew up, all the superheroes were white guys. All of the cool characters on TV were white guys. The Dukes of Hazzard, T.J. Hooker, you know, the cool kick-ass detective, James Bond, all those guys, everybody that was shown as a hero or even a heroine like Wonder Woman, they showed them as white. And so that's, I grew up thinking that that's what was a hero. And as I began to study the African history, I'm like, wait a minute. There's a character named, or God, or he's actually a Neter, which is a force of nature. His name is Heru. Heru is the template for every hero that ever walked the planet. And so Heru is a Kemetic deity, which is smack dab in the middle of Africa. So that means he's an African character. He's an African personage. And when that light clicked on for me, I began to see a lot of relationships between other African deities and what we call, quote-unquote, superheroes. I was like a super nerd when I was a kid. I liked all the superhero cartoons, the television shows, Thundercats, Transformers and G.I. Joe and things like that. And I even read a lot of comic books like Spider-Man, The Incredible Hulk, the X-Men. And as I got older and once again studying this history, I'm like, oh my God, almost every single character is based on an African character, an African god or deity, or an African king or queen. And what was empowering for me was discovering that, because now my imagination, I'm able to see myself in the role of the hero as opposed to watching another man be the hero.
Right.
You kick all the ads and take all the names and all that. Now I can do it. And now I can see in my mind how they had taken that information and used it for themselves. And I'll get into that a little bit later. Matter of fact, I can get into that now. Why they did that, why that was so important for them to do that for themselves. Have you ever gone to like a place like Nandi's or an African art store or something like that and seen all those African masks on the wall?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so those African masks are not just for decoration. Those masks actually have power in them. They're made usually by the secret societies within various African tribes. And what they do when they make those masks is they encode information in it. They encode histories. They encode power. The signs and symbols on the mask actually mean something. They mean the power of the third eye vision, or psychic ability, or the ability to use your voice to invoke creation and manifestation. Various things that those masks mean. And how that's related to superheroes is that most superheroes have what's called an alter ego or an alter identity. And when they have that, what they do is they wear a mask to protect their regular, average, everyday Joe identity and their friends and family from the supervillains. And from, you know, possible even the legal ramifications of taking matters into their own hands. So what they'll do is they wear a mask. That mask can be called the mask of power. And the principle is real simple. If you wear the mask, you get the power. So if you notice, most superheroes don't become super until they put on their mask, or they put on their super suit, or they become something different.
Right.
So for white people, in order for them to become super, they had to take on the mask of being the hero, the mask of these African characters, these African heroes and heroines and kings and queens. That's why it was so important and imperative for them to steal the stories and then begin to play those stories out for themselves, because if you want the power, you wear the mask. So, I mean, at a very basic level, that's where the theft, if you will, of the stories came into play. And, you know, pretty much we got caught up in them telling the stories to themselves. And with the absence of our storytellers, with us not being able to read, for many years it was illegal for blacks to read in America. And consequently, that's a part of the warfare that went on in our mind. So consequently, many years after that, a lot of us still didn't like to read. And our stories are buried in these books, these stories that know, we didn't even think belonged to us. So when, you know, it only takes a minute. That's why it was so dangerous for them to allow us to read, was because it only takes a few minutes for you to put the pieces together. When you start seeing your story, and you're like, wait a minute, that's not their story. My story is older. And it had everything they're showing and playing off as what something that's mine or something that's theirs that actually belongs to me and my family.
Yes, so, sir. And we're subjecting our children to it.
Act like, read. I don't want you. You can't read. If we see them reading, we're going to kill them because, you know, you would wake up almost immediately by being exposed to these stories.
Yes, sir. There's a lot of damage being done as we sit here and let our children believe that these are not our stories. That's why I definitely thought this was a great idea for a program. Because they have no idea. Most of us have no idea. And we look up and idolize people that look nothing like us and never see the greatness in ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Here's the thing. The more I study our story, the more I see how ingenious our people were. Because they told the stories in such a way that it doesn't matter who's telling. And as a matter of fact, they knew that the stories would be taken and told by various people. In the short term for them, they were thinking, well, maybe another tribe might pick up my story, another kingdom in Africa might pick up my story. And they're going to retell it, you know, based on their folklore, based on their local heroes or whatever. But what they did was they infused the story with, like, this DNA, this information that regardless of who tells the story, regardless of what color they are, the essential information is still going to be there. So that information, I want to give this information out to the family so that, you know, you can look this up after the show or even during the show so you can verify what I'm talking about. A part of this essential information that they infused in is numerology, the study and the science of numbers. And you see it all the time in cartoons, all the time in superhero stories. The story and the science of the chakras. Chakras is spelled C-H-A-K-R-A. And it's also very closely related to colors. So we're going to talk a little bit about why certain superhero characters wear certain colors or why those colors are important to them.
Definitely.
And then next is the zodiac, or astrology, the study of the stars.
All right, so they should look all of those up and after you're done speaking and just see how they relate and get even more details.
Yes, all of those, in every superhero story, is infused with some information on one level or another, one of those three things, if not all of them. So I'm going to talk, you know, as we go on, I'm going to expose why those things are important and where you see them over and over in story.
Okay. Did you want to start with, like, give us an example of some things that we may be able to recognize as being part of our own story with any superheroes that we may know of?
Okay, so let's get started with we talked about Horu. He's also known as Horus. All right, his Greek name is Horus, and he is the god of the sky or the god of the sun. All right, and as the god of the sun, what does he do? He takes 12 steps across the sky during the day. When he has taken his 12th step, he is at his weakest point, and he's beginning to be attacked by his evil uncle or brother called Set. Set normally overtakes him right around the 13th hour, and then his rule or reign of darkness takes over. So that's the basic story. If you want to look more into that story, you should look up online something called A Tale of Two Brothers. The Tale of Two Brothers about Horu and Set. But let's bring this home and be a little bit more practical with it. So Horu is the god of the sun. So the sun, we have 12 hours of daytime, 12 hours of nighttime, or 12 hours of daylight, 12 hours of nightlight, roughly around the equinox. Not always 12 and 12. Sometimes it's more. that there's 12 hours in a day, 24 hours in a full day. So, with that being the case, the Haru takes 12 steps across the sky. Well, then that gives you, have you ever heard of Luke Skywalker?
Yes, sir.
Skywalker is the character or the hero character in Star Wars. Well, as a Skywalker, the original Skywalker would be Haru, who takes 12 steps across the sky. Also related to that is the number. To get free from alcohol or any narcotics or abuse like that, they have what's called a 12-step program. And during those 12 steps, you should be able to get free from your addiction. It's not a coincidence that the 12 steps of Haru are the 12 steps of freedom from addiction. The next thing that's related to is his Greek name being Horus. Horus is spelled H-O-R-U-S. If you scramble those letters, you get the word hours. And so he is where we get our concept of hours from the unit of time called an hour. And then, once again, that's related to the 12 zodiacs, as the 12 zodiacs being, if you ever got your chart read or you read a zodiac chart, you know, in the newspaper or something like that, it tells you about your personality. And in its most basic form, you can think of a zodiac as being like star gateways. And on the day that you're born, the month that you're born, and the place that you're born, you get kind of like a cosmic timestamp, which lets you know which influences, which stars, which planets, and other planetary and bodies have an influence on you based on the time of year and the time of day that you're born. And so, they consequently, each zodiac sign kind of gives you a cheat sheet of what kind of personality you may have, some things that you may go through or some things that may be your challenges. The hero's job is to make his way through all 12 of those gates or all 12 of those challenges. And so somewhere else where you may have seen a hero go through 12 challenges is in the story of Hercules. Hercules had 12 trials that he had to go through in order to redeem himself. Well, if you look at the word Haru, and you take out the main consonants, H and R, you'll see that Hercules also has those same consonants, H and R. The same story is for Thor. If you look at Thor, T-H-O-R, so it still has that H-R in it. So you can actually almost see like a family tree for how Haru turns into Horus, turns into Hercules, turns into Thor. It's the same story. It's just told by a different group of people. But it has the same symbology and information in it that follows the story wherever it goes. So that's just for a beginning, where you can see some of the ancient history kind of unfolding and it turning into like a template for what a hero is. So a hero is never perfect. A hero always has challenges, and that's the story of Haru, in that some of his problems is that he was hot-headed, he had an angst, he had a temper problem. He didn't listen. He was like he always had to learn things the hard way. But ultimately, he had to defeat himself, the darkness within himself, in order to become triumphant. And so that's usually a major part of any hero story. The most dull hero story you ever want to see is one where the hero is like always on time, always right, never wrong. He doesn't have any character flaws whatsoever. That's not a good story, because that's not reality. Most people have something about them that they have to defeat or overcome in order to become a hero in their life. So it's important that people, that we as a people, understand our stories about being heroes, so that one, we can begin to understand that no, nobody is perfect, and two, all of us have great difficulties to overcome. individually and as people together. But another great thing about the hero story is everybody knows the hero always winds up triumphant in the end. So that's a pretty good starter for, you know, what the hero is and where that concept comes from.
Okay. Well, what about, I think one of the most popular heroes, the one that I'm always having to hear about in my home, Superman. That's somebody that a lot of our children look up to, some strong white man or so we think. How does that relate back to Haru?
Okay, Superman. Something special about Superman is where does he get his power from?
You know what? I would have to phone a friend on that. My husband's in the other room.
Okay, Superman gets his power from the sun. He gets his power from our sun, right? And he flies around. He has on blue tights, a blue uniform. He has that S on his chest. He has a little spit curl on his forehead and a red cape on his back. That is like the icon of what Superman is and represents. All right? And once again, he flies through the sky. So you can immediately relate him to Haru in that Haru also flew through the sky. Being the sun god, he also was the hawk-headed god. And so having the powers of a hawk meant that he could soar through the sky. The blue that Superman wears is representative of the sky. The sky is blue, and he flies through the sky. So that, once again, relates him to Haru. The S on his chest. Now, here's where you're going to have to do a little bit of research. If you take a look at some ancient statues from Egypt or, you know, Kemet, you'll see that, like, just look for Tutankhamun, and some of the masks that he had on. You'll notice that there was a serpent on his forehead. That serpent is called the Uraeus. The Uraeus stands for power and wisdom, all right, and protection. So with the serpent is very much related to the letter S. It bends and curves like a snake, the letter S does. So the real reason why bullets bounce off the chest of Superman is symbolically he's wearing the emblem of the serpent, which is for protection and power. He also wears that little S curl on his forehead because, once again, in ancient Kemet, the S on the snake on the forehead was a sign of an active pineal gland or an active third eye, or that you had raised up your serpentine fire energy from your lower level to your highest level, and that you're now acting as a hero. You're now acting power and wisdom and understanding. So that's what that S on the forehead is representative of. So almost everything on Superman, including his cape, Haru was called the Red Cape as well, or the Red Cloak, I'm sorry. And so his entire uniform basically will point you back to Haru, or the ancient African origins of where his story comes from. The next thing, in that he gets his power from the sun, well, there's something special about black people called melanin, all right? And it's not that white people don't have any melanin. It's just that they're not able to produce as much as the African. So the special thing about melanin is that it allows you to absorb sunlight and turn it into energy, turn it into power. There's a lot of things that melanin is responsible for, like you have melanin in your inner ear. The more of it that you have, it helps you with balance. It helps you to hear sounds better. It helps you to be more coordinated. If you have melanin in your eye, the more melanin that you have, it allows you to pick up more color, more light, more variations of color and things like that. You'll find that people with very light eyes, or people that if they're albino, many people who are albino, which is completely without melanin, they have severe eye problems because they can't, they don't have any melanin in their eye to help them to pick up the colors and the variations of light, dark and bright. So, in every case, if you have more melanin, that gives you better eyesight, that gives you better hearing, that gives you better balance. Well, that sounds like a superhero to me. Those are all superhero powers. Superman can hear things from miles away. He can see things miles away like a hawk. And he gets his power from the sun. Where, so his real color should be brown to black. Because a guy flying around in white skin like they currently portray Superman would probably have cancer by now. Because, you know, even though they love to tan, right?
Yes, sir.
To look like us, it gives them cancer. The sun is eating them up, you know, and I don't have anything to do with that. You don't have anything to do with that. The sun, you know, that's a beef between them and the sun. They don't have any melanin to protect them or allow them to convert that energy. So nature is doing that, whereas we don't have the same problem with the sun being toxic for us. So,
you know, we actually draw power from the sun.
That's the wrong color. Because the real man who draws color from, I mean, who draws power from the sun is the black man. And that happens every day. That's going on right now. You know, your melanin is a powerhouse. Not only does it do all the things that I mentioned, it also does much more. If you're really interested in studying more about the power of melanin, you might want to get a book by Dr. Jewel Pookrum called Vitamins and Minerals from A to Z. It's a very good book on that. Also, The Black Dot by Dr. Richard King. And there's several other books on melanin that you can pick up. And I advise every household should have a book on melanin so that they understand the power of melanin and also the correct way to maintain and feed your melanin. Because I'm familiar with you and, you know, your various cooking recipes and things like that, there's certain things that you can eat that are detrimental to your physical makeup, and there are certain things that you can eat that will enhance that. So your diet is very important if you're trying to, you know, bring out that inner greatness inside of you. Heck, if you even wanted, you know, if you just wanted to talk about, you know, maybe activating your dream powers or your astral powers, if you're not getting any B vitamins, you ain't going nowhere. So it's important to know your physical makeup and how to feed your melanin to get the best from it, so that you can eat the things that will help you to be a little bit more super every day.
Yes, sir. And I know you said that the blue in Superman's uniform comes from the sky or represents the sky. So I'm assuming that the red would also be a reference to the sun. Or does that refer to something else?
The red would be more of a reference to Earth.
Oh, really? Okay.
The earth, and also to blood, which would be a nod to his mother. So they don't, in a Superman story, his mother and father die before he's born, pretty much, or, you know, right after he's born, because their planet is destroyed. So they never really get into that particular story. And that's a whole another level of blackout. So what I mean by blackout is, you know, they told the story of Superman but didn't tell you the African roots.
Mm.
Well, it also didn't tell you the feminine roots of the hero, because something I also found out during the course of my research is that the first hero, before there was a male hero, there was a female hero. And that was Haru's mother, Offset, or many people may know her as Isis. She was the first hero in that she had to rescue her husband, who was Osar or Osiris. Osiris had been killed by her, by his brother, Set, who also became the enemy of Heru. And when Set killed him, he basically put his body in a box and sent him up the river without a paddle. All right, and nobody knew where he went. So his wife, Osset, goes on this mission to find him, and she's like searches darn near the planet to find him. And when she finally finds him, she brings him back home, and she plans on resurrecting him using her words of power, using her power of magic. Well, before she can do that, her brother Set found the body of Osar. He cuts up the body and then he spreads it out 14 different places. So now she has to go on another treasure hunt. So she's like Indiana Jones, right? You know, she's like going searching in caves and tombs and all over the earth trying to find these pieces of her husband's body so she can put him back together. And eventually she does find all the pieces and is able to put him back together. And with her words of power, she's able to revive him. And that becomes the story of, we get Humpty Dumpty from that. But, you know, Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall.
Mm-hmm.
All the king's horses, all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together, back together again.
Yes, sir.
So, the men, the horses, they can't put them back together, but his woman can. So, brothers, I need you to not forget that about our women. Many of us are broken, and it takes the love of a good woman to help put you back together. And as a matter of fact, moving forward, we need each other. So, you know, we're both together. We have that. We have a power that can't be overcome. You ever seen that cartoon where they were like, "Wonder Twin powers activate"? So it was like the male and the female. Once they got together, they actually activated some new powers. So as powerful as we are alone, the woman is powerful in her own right. The man is powerful in his own right. As powerful as we are separately, we are twice as powerful together. So yeah. That's important to know, because they don't tell that story at all, hardly. You actually have to dig for those stories, because while they were busy trying to oppress us as a people, they were also trying to oppress women, period. But especially the power of the black woman, because you all have a power that's so great that a lot of the inquisitions that went on had to do with burning witches. So many of those witches, now in modern times, they portray them as an old white lady with black hair, with a black cat riding the broom. But all of that black that they show witches wearing is actually a way of them hiding the fact that many of the people that they burned during the times of Inquisition as witches were black women. So that's important to note.
Wow.
That, you know, they were trying to kill that magical power in black women, which is that power of manifestation, of bringing things to life. So women do it all the time. They can't stop it. There's a power that inside of women that they can't stop, but they changed it in your mind. So many women don't actually know that that's what they're doing. But any woman that's ever had a baby has actually manifested something from the spirit realm into the world. Now, that's a magical thing. You took an idea, a physical act. You took the act of making love, and you took an idea, something that was really nothing. It was born in the mind, and you made it into reality on the earth. That is something that women have the power to do, to manifest things onto the earth. So once again, brothers, if you're trying to manifest an idea, if you're trying to manifest a business idea, it would behoove you to have some feminine energy around you. If it's not a, you know, a woman that you call your woman. You know, you need to incorporate your sisters, your mothers, your aunties, your grandma, because they are the ones with the power to make your dreams, your hopes, and things like that into reality. That is a real life superpower, and you still have it. It didn't go anywhere.
Wow. And that's right in line with what I was going to ask next. And I love that you bring that out about the witches, because I didn't know that, but it makes so much sense, because I've always seen where Black women, especially from the continent or even from the Caribbean, are very spiritual, and the white people never really understand it. It's always looked at as evil, even like voodoo and things like that. So it makes perfect sense to me, but I didn't know that. As far as the role in women, can some of the female superheroes be linked back to ancient Kemet?
Yeah. So let's go with Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was an Amazon. And basically, these Amazons, they were on this island. And this island supposedly had no men. And it was like a very, it was like a, in the Greek story and in the story as they presented, you know, in the cartoons or the comic books, it's almost like an island of dudes, but they just all happen to be women. And that there, it's a very patriarchal system that they show in the comic book. The true story, however, is much different. Amazon was not an island. The Amazon was considered to be northern Africa, all of northern Africa. And the women, consequently, were this warrior class of women, and they had a female goddess. And the goddess went by many names, but the name that perhaps the oldest one that I've been able to find is Neith, N-E-I-T-H, Neith. Neith becomes Athena and Medusa. And before the Greeks got a hold of her, Medusa was the most beautiful Black woman in the world, and due to her power and her destructive aspect, because she could be very destructive, she became villainized and made into the ugly woman with the snakes for hair and things like that. But even the snakes for hair are symbolic, once again, if we go back to the Mask of Tutankhamun, and you have that Uraeus on the top, the snakes are actually a symbol for wisdom, power, understanding, and protection. So having a head full of snakes would be all the more power, so that it was actually a representation of just how powerful this woman was. So anyway, Wonder Woman was an Amazon. So, but we have to take it from this island to Africa. The first Amazonians were African. Now, if they did have some islands off the coast of northern Africa in the Mediterranean that also had the same feminine matriarchal society, and those women anywhere that pretty much anywhere where the white man found Black women who were empowered and who also fought right alongside the men, they called them Amazons. So wherever they found them. As far as the power of Wonder Woman, she has the power. She had that lasso, where if she lassoed you with it, you couldn't tell a lie. She can always get to the truth of the matter. Well, there's a Kemetan deity named Maat, who also represents truth and justice, balance and harmony. And that is where Wonder Woman would get that power from, or inherited that power from. You also see that same thing if you've ever been to a courthouse and seen the lady standing there, Lady Justice. She's holding the scales and she's blindfolded.
Yes, sir.
And so here in America, the concept of justice is blind. And I think, that is the problem with American justice, is it's blind. The people who are the true perpetrators of crime, and it prosecutes the people who are the victims.
I know that's right.
Whereas Maat was not blind. She could see, and she meted out true justice. She could see who was right and who was wrong, And she too weighed, you know, she weighed the hearts of men on a balance, on a scale. She would put your heart on one end of the scale and a feather, an ostrich feather, which once represented truth, on the other end of the scale. If your heart was heavy, heavy with what? Heavy with guilt, heavy with anguish, heavy with, you know, just being evil, you would fail the test. And you would have to go back and do it again. All right, you would be reincarnated. You would have to pay the price for the things that you have done, which is justice. And then you got to go back and start all over again and repeat it. So, Wonder Woman is actually Mayotte or Neet, and I'm an Amazonian woman. And then you also have like Catwoman. Catwoman is based on a deity or a couple of deities in Kemet called Bast and Sekhmet. Sekhmet is the lioness goddess, and she's like the goddess of, she's an avenger. She was sent to avenge her father Ra. And what happened was, I guess the people began to rise up against Ra, and so he sent his eye, which became Sekhmet, to avenge him or to take out his enemies. Well, she came down to Earth and she started taking out the bad guys. But the only problem was she started liking taking out the bad guys, so she started killing everybody. And she just was going on a rampage. And that's where you get that saying that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. In that there was this powerful woman on the scene destroying the world, and there was nothing anybody could do to stop her. So Ra sends his main man, the guy who's like, he's real smooth, he's real good with words. He writes poetry, and he knows how to talk really well, and he's really smart and intellectual. He says, listen, you got to go down there and get her, because she's going to kill everybody. And so he goes down. His name is Tahuti. Or Thoth. He goes down, but he's afraid of her. He's like, man, I don't know what to do with this woman. She's on the wild. She's, you know, she's tripping. So he comes up with an idea. He says, all right, this is what I need to have. He goes to the women of Kemet. He says, listen, I need you to make some beer, but I want you to put red dye in it. It's important that you put red dye in it because Sekhmet is on the loose, and she's killing people, and she's, like, licking up the blood. She's, like, lost. So we need her to think that this beer is blood. So they made all this beer, and they dyed it red. And then they poured it out on the fields where she had been killing people. So she goes out there, and she's just licking it up. Like, oh, this is great. This is great. Love this. You know, I'm just loving this blood. You know, I killed all these people. I've taken all this revenge. And she starts getting a little bit more dull, a little bit moving a little bit more slow. She's, you know, I need to go take a nap somewhere. So now, Tahuti thinks, okay, now I can go up to her and approach her and talk some sense into her. So that's what he does. He goes up to her and he tells her some stories to remind her of who she really is, that she's not a killer, that she's not just about vengeance, that she actually was this beautiful maiden who had, you know, she pretty much just forgot herself in bloodlust. And he's like, listen, I need you to come home with me. And she finally remembered who she was and decided to go back to her father, Ra. But only after she had been sedated with the drink and that, you know, Tahuti had been able to talk some sense into her. And still to this day, brothers use that trick to take women home from the club. Like, you know, we got to get some drinks in her. If happened to her, she'd be ready to go home.
That's so right.
That's actually a very ancient technique that brothers have been using for millennia. But once again, it's related to the sisters. And that's who has become our modern-day Catwoman. Or in, like, the Thundercats, she would be Chitara, or some other character like that. Unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of you know, strong female characters in the superhero game, but all of them are based on, you know, Asian African deities, and that's one of the major ones.
Okay. I remember in class, one of the things that you said that I thought was very interesting, and I wish we can't do a visual here because the visual really helped a lot, but you start talking about the Jedis a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the Jedis. So the Jedis in the Star Wars trilogy, or actually it was more than a trilogy now. It's like six movies and there's probably going to be some more. But the Jedi were... in the story, it's like a group of these, they're almost like samurai, and they're diplomats, and they go from planet to planet, helping to solve problems and, you know, counsel people on, you know, the right things that they should or should not be doing, things like that. But that's actually based on a real comedic priesthood called the Jedi Priesthood. Now, in the story, on the movie, Jedi is spelled J-E-D-I, whereas Jedi, the real Jedi priesthood was spelled D-J-E-D-H-I. So it would be more like Jet the Jed High. And so that was actually a real priesthood, and they had a staff, and it looked very similar to the lightsaber that the Jedi in the movie used. So if you want to take a look at what that staff looked like, go online and Google a Jed pillar. The Jed pillar is spelled D-J-E-D-P-I-L-L-A-R, Jed pillar. And if you Google that and look up the images, you'll find this staff is like a vertical rod that has four slats inserted into it horizontally. And it looks very similar to a lightsaber. Supposedly, it stands for being upright, for being having a strong foundation, and for having mastered the four elements. So the Jedi in the movie had the power over the Force, and the Force, they were able to move things and pull things to them, push things away. They could read people's minds and put thoughts in other people's minds and things like that. Well, once again, that's actually based on real concepts from Kemet, because once you master the four elements, you do gain the power to create new things. As a matter of fact, the power to create new things is called alchemy. The science of that is called alchemy, and it's where we get our the word chemical and our current physics and chemistry. We get it from that word, alchemy. Well, alchemy comes straight from Kemet. So alchemy is alchemet, which is the science or the black arts. Alchemy actually means the black arts. So it's the power to transmute things or to change things, to change something from one thing to another. That's what alchemy is all about. Consequently, that's the science, that's what the science of the Jedi were all about, changing, transforming. So that's why on the walls of Kemet, you would see people with the heads of animals or wearing feathers or different animal parts and things like that, because the name of the game was transformation. The name of the game for us as a people is still transformation. It's not just a physical transformation, but it's a mental and spiritual transformation. And it's all encapsulated in our sciences, and you have to begin to learn the sciences in order to begin to transform your mind. And it starts with the stories. It starts with, you know, the hero stories, the fairy tales, the things like that. All the things that we think are not related to us actually are. Every fairy tale has an African origin. Every superhero story has an African origin, and it has some science in it for us. We need to begin to understand the laws of transmutation. How do you transform from one thing to another? How do you transform your mind? Well, it begins with the study of astronomy. We talked earlier about how studying astronomy will help you to kind of get a gauge on maybe why you act a certain way under certain circumstances, why you treat other people the way you treat them, or why you maybe close in on yourself when things happen to you. If you can understand that, you begin to understand some of the things that you need to work on to begin to change, to make positive change in your life. The same thing with the study of numerology. The numbers that surround you in your life and that are represented by your name, your date of birth, things like that, they also will help you to transform if you know what those things mean. So the cool thing about those stories is that all of us already know these stories. We've all been told the story of Superman. Everybody's seen Star Wars just about. Everybody's heard of, you know, Cinderella or Prince Charming, things like that. And many times we've learned the negative aspect of how those things have been taken from us and shown to us, like, you know, we need this big, white, dashing Prince Charming to come save us. And that's detrimental to the black mind. And that's true. But you can't ignore the science of a Prince Charming, the science of a Cinderella, the science of waking up your lower self so that you can realize that you're something more. So even though those stories were taken and changed so that they would have kind of a detrimental effect on us, the magic of that is that because you know the story, if you learn how to unlock the symbolism of those stories, you'll be able to see the African legacy that was infused in there and how it's the science of transformation. And that's real powerful. So really, by our enemies continuing to tell those stories, they've actually done themselves a disservice, because in those stories is the blueprint for my transformation. And because, you know, I've studied how those things relate to me and to my people, then I can start to unlock these things. And everybody else can too. It doesn't take, you know, it doesn't take very long. You know, some people, they're like, well, how long have you been studying this stuff? Where did you get this stuff from? I know it took a long time. And that's not the case. You know, I've been studying this stuff for a few years. But my understanding of it began to unwrap very quickly for me, because I knew the stories. And most of us do. So, you know, if all it really takes is to get yourself a good book on astrology, a good book on numerology and symbology and things like that, and you'll see how they've been using your African science all over the place. Okay. And it's yours. So
yes,
that's important to know. And it really takes, you know what it took for me, someone called some of these things to my attention. The first thing I learned was that Luke Skywalker was actually Haru. I heard a lecturer or somebody say that a couple of years ago. And that really piqued my interest. And when I heard that, it sparked me to, you know, okay, so I need to study Haru. If Luke Skywalker was Haru, and I've seen Star Wars like 20 times, I need to figure out who Haru is. And when I began to study it, I'm like, man, they pretty much took the whole story of Haru and made it into Star Wars. And that really, like, began to lead me down the pathway of, you know, discovering new things. And so it's the same thing for other people. Hopefully me sharing this information is going to prompt you to start looking this stuff up. And I promise you that the things that you will find will be so amazing. It will be so enlightening and empowering. It'll be like, wow, like the whole time this stuff has been in front of my face, and I didn't know it. You know, and you wouldn't know it because it's been recolored. You know, it's been hidden from you, but it's actually hidden in plain sight. So it really speaks to the genius once again of our people, in that they were able to keep the information that we really needed hidden within the story, so that it doesn't matter who told it. we were still going to be able to get that information that we need. So that's real key.
Yes, sir. Well, for anybody that wants to call in with any questions or comments, the number is 760-569-7676. The participation code is 948656#. I see quite a few people on the phone lines tonight. So what I'm going to do, I've opened up the Q&A line, so I won't be going straight down the line today because I know many of you are probably just listening and soaking in the information. So I'm only going to come to the people that actually have a question or comment. So if you want to just hit *6 on your phone, that will put you in the Q&A, and I will know that you raised your hand and you have something that you want to contribute to the conversation. So again, the call-in number is 760-569-7676. Participation code 948656#. And then you just want to hit *6 to get into the Q&A line. And wouldn't you know it, we see who is first in line in the Q&A. Peace, Brother David. How you doing?
Peace. How are you?
I'm good.
Peace, Brother Keith. Peace, brother. Yes, sir. I want to ask you about the story of Hancock and the movie Hancock in relation to Black Man in America. And also, Ray. What does Ray have to do with the whole thing? Character Ray in the movie.
Okay. All right. So, Hancock is basically the story of the Black Man in America in that Hancock was the superhero. He had all these great superpowers, but he was an asshole. They kept calling him an asshole for the entire movie, right? An asshole is related to Set. Set is the bad guy of African history, or African mythology. He's the god of darkness, the underworld. He, you know, he's like the god of chaos, if you will. So they kept calling him an asshole, which means when he... his major problem was he didn't remember who he was. He sat down and had a conversation with Ray and his wife, and he told them, you know, I don't remember who I am. I don't know who I am. I woke up in a hospital and didn't know my name. You know, they asked me for my John Hancock, and I thought that that was my name. Okay, so that part right there was the most powerful part of that movie, because the Black Man in America is the man who has been renamed. You know, we all are walking around with someone else's last name because we thought that that was our name. We woke up in America, and they told us that we were black. They told us that we used to be slaves. You know, we dragged your ancestors over here on the boat, and we decided, you know, we wanted to fight and let y'all go. But, you know, pretty much we did you a favor. You owe us, that kind of thing. You know, so we woke up in America with amnesia, not knowing who we were with somebody else's name. So that's what Hancock was all about. He woke up in America. He's got all this power, but he don't know what to do with. And he's actually acting like an asshole or acting like the bad guy because he's tearing the world up around him. Well, unfortunately, that's the story of a lot of brothers in the hood. In that we have a lot of, you know, talented brothers. It's a lot of artists. It's a lot of brothers that are good with numbers. It's a lot of brothers that would be warriors for our people. But they're tearing up the world around them because they don't know who they are. So they're robbing each other. They, you know, those are the guys, the knuckleheads in your neighborhood that's breaking into your house, that's killing the kids on the corner, that's selling drugs in the gas station. That's, you know, having babies with all these women and not bothering to come back home and take care of them. That is the Black Man in America, Hancock. You don't know who the heck you are. Ray was key in that movie because Ray is Ra. And Ra is the father of Peru or Hancock. So in the movie, they didn't show him as being the father of Hancock, but they did show him as being the father. He was a father. He had a son, right? And Ra is actually, you know, we pronounce it Ra now, but in ancient times, it would have been pronounced more like Ray, like Sun Ray. That's what Ra represents, the light and power of the sun. so by them portraying Ray as being a white guy, he was, you know, that's basically making the black man subservient, you know, putting the son up under a master or a ruler. And if you notice, that was Ray's job. He was like, listen, you don't know how to act, so I'm going to tell you how to act. You don't know how to talk to people, I'm going to tell you how to talk to people. You know, he like, I'm going to whip you into shape. I'm going to make you a hero, but you're going to be a hero my way. You know, you need to get people to love you, and here's how you get people to love you. So he basically, like I'm going to take you from being a bum, and I'm going to make you into a hero. that's pretty much the role that Ray played in that movie. And then if you notice, Ray had the Charlize Theron, I forgot what her character was, her name was in the movie, but Ray was married to her. But in the story, it showed you that actually she wasn't Ray's wife. She was Hancock's wife. And had been for thousands of years. And Ray basically like, I got your woman. I got your power. I can tell you how to act. You got to do what I say. And, you know, that was like the underlying message of that. Now, they tried to cover it up by having it once again played by a white lady. And so on the surface, if you're looking at it, most of us like, okay, here we go again. Another brother, he got to get with a white girl. You know, you kind of tune out right after that. But her character is actually the character of Isis, the character of Het-Heru, or Sekhmet, the Avenger. She really did belong with Hancock. In the movie, they made it play out like, you know, if we're together, then we're weak. You remember that? When they got together, he started losing. Right. So subliminally, what they're trying to tell you is, black man, when you get with your sisters, when you get with these women out here, your women, you're going to be weaker. They're going to make you weak. So you don't need to mess with them. You need to get away from them. Because together, you're weak. When you go apart, then you become strong. So they really tried to play that up in the movie where he had to get the hell away from her in order to gain his superpowers back. And that's actually the opposite of what needs to happen. The real story, or the African story, is that once those two come together, they become even more powerful. So they tried to, you know, they tried to hide it up in the Hollywood mix, but that story is the story of the black man. And once you remember who you are, once he did begin to remember, once they started telling, you know, once he began to learn his history, that is when he began to become stronger. They started showing him with the symbolism. You know, he walked up on the bank, and if you notice, if you go back to that bank scene, they had a big hawk behind him. That hawk was Heru, and they had him wearing all black, and he had the hawk on his outfit. When he knew what that was, that's when he began to become more powerful. They didn't play it all the way through, just because they were trying to do this whole subliminal thing. But it's still a very powerful story if you know that you are the hero and you have to get your history back. That's like a big missing key for us. If we get our history back and find out who we are, how powerful we are, that knowledge of self, like that man, know thyself, woman, know thyself. If you know who you are, then you become more powerful than anything. You know, that was a real powerful story right there.
Right.
Any other questions, okay, Brother David?
That's it. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome.
All right. That is the infamous David Muhammad calling in.
You know what? I know that he likes Dragon Ball Z too.
Yes.
So, I know he likes that. I go ahead and hit that too. So Dragon Ball Z is a story of Goku and his son Gohan. They go through lots of adventures. the main part of that story is Goku was always fighting these bad guys. And for some reason or another, he always winds up dead. And when he winds up dead, his son goes and looks for something called Dragon Balls. Now, those Dragon Balls are related to something I talked about earlier in the show called chakras. So he has to collect 7 Dragon Balls to activate them. Once he activates these 7 Dragon Balls, this dragon appears called Shenron. Shenron then grants him 3 wishes. Usually he wishes his daddy back to life and his friends and anybody else that's been hurt. They want him to come back to life, so they always are asking this dragon to bring new life, transform, change. And that's actually based on, once again, comedic science. So because you have something in your body called chakras, these are all energy centers in your body, and they will be likened to balls or wheels of energy. Once you are able to collect them and activate them, you turn on something in your body, in your brain, as a matter of fact, that we may call like the 3 wise men. They're these glands, the pituitary, the pineal, and the hypothalamus gland in your brain. You turn those on, and it's like you are granted a new level of spirituality and understanding. And supposedly, if you're able to activate them truly, you'll get superpowers. You'll get more superpowers. You'll be more in tune with not only your body, but with the spirit of things that are going on. And so, once again, that's based on ancient alchemy. And so the same thing with Goku. He always dies. I mean, he's died like 5 or 6 times in that story. And that's based on Osiris or Osar, who is the god who died and returned. So he's the green god. The green god is based on nature. You know how we actually see it in Michigan very well, because in the wintertime, all the plants die. Mm-hmm. All the green fall, you know, all the leaves fall off the trees and turn brown and gray and white and all that, and they're thought to be dead. But in the spring and summer, they come back to life. And so that's the story of Osar. He dies and then he's reborn. And that's Goku. He always dies. He has these adventures in the underworld. Sometimes he trains and he learns to get stronger. And then he comes back stronger, and he's able to help defeat the enemy. So Goku and Son Goku are like Osar and Haru. So that story is very much related to our history as well. So I threw that in there because I know David would like that.
Yes, he does. Even got the video games to prove it. I did have a question that came in from Skype. I'm assuming, have you seen Django yet?
No, I have not seen Django yet.
Okay, there was a question about Django, so I'll have to get back to you on that one. One thing that I heard you mention was the chakras and being an African science, which makes sense, but a lot of times it's credited towards India and something that has to do especially with the Brahmin, lighter skin class or whatever, of people. So is there actual proof that that actually originated in Africa versus India?
Well, it migrated from Africa into India via the Dravidians. The Dravidians are the dark Indian people that you see that are darker than any, you know, African American you ever, or black person you ever see over here. I don't know if you've ever seen.
Yes, sir.
some of them have, and they have. Some of them have real straight hair too.
Mm-hmm.
Other ones have, you know, very nappy hair. But as far as skin color, they're like jet black. Those are the ones who introduced the science from Africa into India or Asia. The thing is, you know, we have this, if you look at a map, they have something called the Middle East, right?
Right.
And the Middle East is like that gateway from Africa into Asia and India. Well, the problem with that is there's no such thing as the Middle East. The Middle East is a fabrication. it's actually based on the information that I got from Dr. Charles S. Finch. The Middle East is actually Africa's northeast extension. Geologically, that means that, you know, that there's that, like, that sea that goes up there. I think that's the Red Sea that's between Africa
right.
and what they call the Middle East. That's really just a depression in the ground. And it's not disconnecting Africa from Asia. It's actually a part of the same body. So that is Africa's northeast extension. And so people tend to think that places like Egypt and what they're calling Jordan and Israel and all that, that's called the Middle East, and that there's no such thing. That's still a part of Africa. And the sciences that originated in Africa mostly originate from the Nubia, Ethiopia region, and then branch out east and west, you know, from that Nile Valley, the early Nile Valley civilization, which includes the science of chakras. It also includes the martial arts, and pretty much carved in stone on the walls of Kemet in various pyramids and tombs and public works, you know, you'll find these martial arts actually carved in stone where they were going through various moves and kata. We would call them today in karate, like katas or various styles, the crane style, the tiger style, the things like that, all originate in Africa. You know, the lion style. There's no lions in Africa. I mean, in Asia, they got tigers. But the lion style comes from Africa, and then it goes over these places. And then, of course, you know, when new people get things, they put their own flavor on, right? And so sometimes we get that confused with origination. You know, they'll say, well, you know, that's an Indian practice, or that's what the people in India do. And that is true. But it's really an adaptation of the things that they got from their African brothers and sisters. The yoga, okay, so the chakras are related to yoga.
Right.
And when you do these various yogic poses, they help you to channel and unlock the energies. But once again, you'll see yoga in these various yogic poses on the walls of ancient Kemet. So this science is very old. And the first place that it was, besides ancient Africa, was Asia, but it was taken from Africa and into Asia. It did not originate in Asia.
Yes.
It takes you to, you'll have to do some research, you know, searching out some various pictures and archives and things like that to find the writing on the wall. But once again, the genius of our people, they had the forethought to actually carve it in stone. So you can see your history and your lineage, regardless to what, you know, anybody says. You know, we originated it, or we changed it, or we did whatever. Well, but my people put it in stone, and this stone is older than what you're talking about.
I know that's right.
It's not to take anything away from anybody, because, you know, various people in India actually did make some, you know, probably made some contributions to the science. As far as how to access the information and actually spread it to other places. So, you know, they like to make us think in America that we're separate, you know, and that Africans are so separate from Indians and other Asians and things like that. But, you know, come to find out, there's you know, you can go to India, you can even go to China and Japan and find, you know, you might stumble on some people, and you're like, wait a minute, where do these people come from? They look like my cousin. You know, they'll be in these little towns or tribes. It'll be a whole, you know, whole groups of these Africans in China, Japan, Asia, India, and things like that, because that is where we went at first, and we built these communities, and over time and change and mutation, you know, you get these other races, a quote-unquote races, but our people were there first. We were everywhere first. And not only were we there, we went there and came back and then went again. So all of these sciences actually have their origination in Africa, and because we moved around so much, we took them to other places. And because we're so old, in some cases, we may have forgotten that we took them there. And in our case in America, we didn't forget, we just were never told. And we didn't have the access to the information that would have let us know that. But being that, you know, today, in this day and age, we're in the age of information. We're in the age of the knower, as a matter of fact. Astrologically, we're in, you know, either approaching or right in the sign of Aquarius, which is the sign of the knower. So all this information that, you know, previously we didn't know or didn't have access to, thought belonged to somebody else, the truth is coming to the light. And we're able to see, wait a minute, that was me. That was me the whole time. So that's what's great. You know, it's great to be alive right now. To be, you know, you have this information at your fingertips. Sometimes you just have to shut off Facebook, shut off MySpace, and stop playing games and start using this tool called the Internet to do some research, you know, to find out who you are and where you've been and, where, you know, the footprints of your people. Because it's all over the place. You know, we've been everywhere.
That's very true. I'm going to give the call-in number again. It's 760-569-7676. Participation code 948656 pound. Be sure you hit *6 if you want to get in, because I'm not going to go straight down the line like I normally do. I have a David Muhammad wants to get back in, and I have a Skype question coming up, and then we'll go back to the phone lines. But I did want to say that what you're saying is absolutely true. It's actually funny. I was just looking for art one day on a website, and I came across an actual portrait of a woman from Brunei, and she looks exactly like me. And as a matter of fact, I like to stay kind of anonymous, so sometimes I'll use her picture instead of mine, and people who know me a lot of times can't tell the difference because we look so much alike. And then I was watching Hidden Colors too, and they were somewhere, I think, in the South Pacific, and it was somebody looked dead on my uncle in there. So that's definitely, definitely true. And I think I even told you at one of your lectures that I had went down to Mexico a few times to some of the excavation sites and saw, you know, the hieroglyphs on some of those excavation sites and the black people and dark brown people that they were uncovering. So I haven't been to Egypt yet. I'd love to see those pyramids. I can only imagine. But I have seen a little bit of that, and it's very, very true. We are the original people everywhere you could go on the planet Earth. We were there first. So that is definitely true. I'm going to go to Brother David Muhammad, and then I will take a question from Skype. And if anybody has any questions, go on and *6 in. Brother David, what you got for us?
Yeah, Brother Keith, I've got to ask you about the story of the Kung Fu Panda. Or just a movie.
Okay. You just kind of want me to go over it, or you had a specific question about that?
Just go over how the whole story. I got a pretty good idea, but I want your take on it, your take on the Kung Fu Panda.
Okay. All right, so Kung Fu Panda is, that was a very good story. I mean, the Pixar and Disney have been actually putting out some really scientific movies. They tend to use a lot of symbolism in their movies, and they're deep with it. And that was, you know, another example of how they actually put in a lot of, you know, alchemy into that movie, because it was about someone, Po, being a panda bear, who had always dreamed and imagined that he could be a kung fu master, but he didn't match the profile. He didn't have the power. He didn't have the skill. I mean, he was, you know, pandas are overweight. You know, they're known for moving slow. You know, you wouldn't think of a panda as being a kung fu master or even able to do some of the feats of kung fu. And it was about him realizing his dream or making his idea into reality. One, by holding on to his dream, and two, by actually working toward his dream. So once you learn the science that you can create things in your mind, you can manifest the things that you have in your mind, there's that old saying, if I can believe it, I can achieve it. Whatever I think I can do, I can do. But there's a missing ingredient. You actually have to put some work in to do that. And they really actually showed how he took his dream and then worked towards it. You know, he had to do a lot of training in order to become the Kung Fu Panda. And he even with doing all the training, he had been foretold to be this dragon warrior. All right, so the dragon warrior, we can take that back to ancient Kemet, and we'll talk about the snake again, the Uraeus. If we know what the Uraeus means, we talked about it earlier, it means wisdom, power, and protection. And so this dragon, this golden dragon that was above this pond in this temple, had the scroll which would unlock his unlimited power. And so the dragon in that story is the same as the dragon of the Uraeus. It's also something that has to do with your chakras. There's a dragon or a serpent, if you will, called Kundalini. Kundalini is spelled K-U-N-D-A-L-I-N-I. And it's the serpent said to be wrapped around your root chakra or your base chakra, the chakra that's responsible for you being rooted to the earth, for your desire for the earth, for material things. Once that snake or serpent is released and able to go up through your chakras to your crown chakra or to your top chakra, then your powers are released, your higher powers are released. And so Po training his body, training his physical body, in order to get to the point where he was worthy to read the dragon scroll is representative of the work that you have to do to open up all of your chakras, starting from the lowest one, going up to the top. And then you can begin to unlock your powers. So when he got the scroll, he looked at it, and, you know, it wasn't nothing on it. It was just a reflection of himself. And as he gazed on it, he's like, you know, this is nothing. It was a trick. You know, I'm not the dragon warrior. Just reading this, seeing myself did not give me any power. So he went home in defeat. And it took his father to tell him, well, you know, I have this special soup, you know, and people for years been thinking that this soup has a special ingredient in it. And the secret is, there is no special ingredient. It's just special because I think it's special. That is actually what unlocked the power for him, because looking at yourself, you have to realize that you are special. That's where you have to start first. Before you can do any super duper deeds, unlocking any powers, or doing something you never thought you could do, or going somewhere you never thought you could go, you have to realize that you yourself are special. You have to realize that you are the one who can do it for you. You have to fall in love with yourself, and you have to stop blaming yourself. You have to feel like you're worthy. You have to actually take a really good look in the mirror and say, I can do this. Once you're able to do that, that's what really unlocks the power. And that's really what that story was about. It was also, if you go back, his enemy, which was, I think, Tai Lung was his name. His enemy was the rightful inheritor of the Dragon Scroll. He should have been the Dragon Warrior. But they said there was darkness in his heart, so he couldn't be the dragon warrior. Now, you know, of course they're talking about the black man when they're talking about you. You can't go but too far. You can't go but so far. You're the rightful inheritor of this information, of this legacy, but we're going to go ahead and give it to somebody else. That's really where they injected him in, but he also represents the lower nature. Just the lust for power. I just want power for power's sake, as opposed to the pure goal of, well, I want power to help my people. I want power to not just be empowered myself and to lord it over other people, but I need to unlock this power inside of me, because it's going to take me back to my roots. It's going to take me back to my divinity. There's a difference from wanting power for that reason than you wanting power just so you can lord it over other people. So now I'm the man, and now you got to do what I say. So that story had so much symbolism in it. I actually did a whole complete write-up of it, and I don't have it handy, but there were so many symbols in that one. Those are the major ones that I can bring to mind right now. As far as that story, the five, I think it was the Furious Five, represented right. The five senses. The five senses of a human being: touch, taste, sight, smell, and hearing. That's what the Furious Five represented. He had to go beyond the Furious Five, the five senses. You have to go beyond the five senses into the spiritual realm, which is insight and intuition and belief. You have to believe in yourself. That takes you beyond the Furious Five, or your five senses, if you will, because your five senses actually will keep you rooted in the material world, in the materiality. And so once you're able to master them, which means, you know, you study martial arts, and, you know, I know plenty of other people do, but that's about beating your body into submission. It's about getting your body to do things you never thought your body could do. That's why many times they put you through drills, and you have to, you know, punch a lot, kick a lot. You have to do things that make your muscles burn, and, you know, you have to do these feats of endurance to basically train and master your body. That's what the martial sciences are about. It's like whipping your body into shape. And as opposed to your body telling you what it can do, once you master the martial arts, you tell your body what you can do. It's like we about to kick three dudes in midair and not come down. That kind of thing. But you have to actually put in the work to do that. So you have to have both. You have to have that belief in yourself, and you also have to have the actions behind it to activate that. And once you can do that, I mean, there's really no limits to what you can do. But you have to be willing to do both. You have to be willing to believe in yourself and know that you have the power and put in the work. And that's the attack on our people, in that, you know, we get blasted every day, every day. You can't do that. You can't do that. That's not even who you are. You're Shorty Mac with, you know, all my baby mamas. You're, you know, basketball wives. You're, you know, you welfare mama. You're, you know, you're not a hero. You're not the person that you think you are. You know, we get that on TV all day, every day. It's called TV programming for a reason. Everything in the media tells you that you're not the one. Somebody else is. So that's hard for us to believe in ourselves, but that's one of the major keys. The next thing is, you got to get up off your butt. After you believe in yourself, then you got to get up off your butt and put in some work to make your dream into a reality. And I think those are kind of the most important things that were in that movie. It was chock full of metaphysical stuff, but that'll be for another couple hours.
Okay. All right. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. And before we get to the next Skype question, I don't know why people Skyping in and then text. I got a text question, a Skype question. Call in. I've been doing your dirty work for you. But I did want to touch really quickly, because one interesting thing that you said in one of your lectures, you were talking about good and evil, and how that in and of itself related to Haru and Set, and how the evil may not always be as evil as we think it is.
Oh yeah, well, that's the story. A lot of people may have trouble getting with, maybe not. But here's the science on that: is both good and evil are inside of everyone. Okay? Once everyone realizes that, that's when we can actually make some progress. You have the potential to do good and the potential to do evil in you at every moment. And a real good example of that is, you're a good guy, you're a good woman, but, you know, maybe somebody catches you on the wrong day, and you know you cuss them out like you have never cursed out anybody. You know we all have the potential to do things that we are quote unquote evil, right? That's one of the laws of Tahuti, which is a Kemetan principle called the law of polarity, and that everything has darkness and light in it, good and bad, negative and positive. So, in a lot of stories, the devil is the bad guy. In the Bible story, in the Quran, in many other different religions, they have a bad guy, a devil, if you will. But if you really look at the devil, what he's doing is actually calling your attention to something that's wrong. All right, so we take the Bible story. In the Garden of Eden, they think they're in paradise. They're walking around butt naked. They're eating fruit off trees and bushes and sleeping on the dirt. And they think this is paradise. This is great. And the devil comes to them in the form of a serpent. There goes that serpent again, which we know in African science is actually wisdom. But the serpent comes to them and says, listen, God is fooling you. You think that you're in paradise, but you're not. You think that you got it good here, but he's actually lording over you. And if you eat this fruit that he told you not to eat, the fruit of the knowledge of good and bad, then you'll be like God. All right? You'll really be like God. You can stop playing. You can wake up from this dream that you're in. So they eat the fruit. When they eat the fruit, they immediately realize, wait a minute, I'm butt naked. I need to put some clothes on. I need to go cover myself up. You know, I'm eating from trees. I'm not even living in a house. This is not the paradise I thought it was. And so what they really learned, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, is learning about polarity, learning about negative and positive, good and bad. And so the devil called their attention to the fact that you ain't in paradise. And when that happens, it breaks the spell of ignorance. That's what he did. He broke the spell of ignorance for them. Well, you know, they have that term, ignorance is bliss. So when you're ignorant, you think that you have things well. You think, you know, I live well, I'm eating good, I got something going on for myself. And the whole time not knowing that you're actually a slave. That's actually the story. There's the story again of the black man in America. How many thousands of people, you know, 1,000 people, Harriet Tubman said that she rescued, but that she had could have saved so many more if they only knew they were slaves. Well, it's a lot of us still today. We still think that everything is good. We think that when we go to school, we're getting a real education. We think that when we go apply for a job, we have the same chance to get it that another guy does. We think that it's a level playing field now. Everything is good. Slavery's been over for a while now. There's no open hostility towards me. But yet and still, all these bad things happen to us on a daily basis. If you watch the news, it's like watching the most depressing thing you've ever seen in your life. I don't watch the news anymore. Because every story almost is a story of oppression or repression or something bad happening to one of my people. Unchecked. You know, it's like, you know, We shot this boy 50 times and he didn't have a gun, a knife, or nothing. That kind of thing. Well, we still think that we're free. And actually, we're not. That the devil is knocking like, listen, idiots, you're not free. You're not free. You're living in a false paradise because you get to buy Jordans, because you get to watch TV. Because you get to take your tax refund check and go buy a bunch of crap that you're not going to be able to afford regularly, but you're going to go splurge on a bunch of BS right now and be happy with it, you think you're free. Because you took the money that you worked for me to get that really is not worth anything, but you worked for me to get it and you're going to run and give it right back to me, you think you're free. Because like, you got the choice to go pick what kind of TV you want, what kind of VCR you want, what kind of movie you want to watch tonight, what kind of garbage you want to eat at the restaurant. You think you're free. That's what the devil is trying to tell you,
long as you're not free, player, you still a slave. And that's what the devil plays like the player hater. He's the one telling you, oh, you think you got it good. Nah, bro, you ain't got it good like you think you do. You actually, your game is whack. You faulty. That's what the player hater does. And we usually hate the player for telling us the truth. We like, nah, man, you always hating on me. You always trying to bring me down. When in actuality, he's trying to put you up on game. And that's really Lucifer. The word Lucifer means light bringer or light bearer. And that's where we get our term to be illuminated or enlightened. When you're enlightened, it means you're smart. It means you know something. So actually, the devil has been made into the bad guy when really he was not the bad guy. He was the one trying to tell you what was up. The bad guy was the God that was telling you, you need to bow down to me. You need to worship me. I'm jealous. And if I catch you worshiping anybody else, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you and your children. And then I'm going to put a curse on you for generations. That's the kind of God I am. So that God is the one that's actually perpetrating the slavery. He's actually the one behind the curtain, like, you know, making you subservient because you think that you owe him something. When in actuality, he owes you. In actuality, he's jealous of you. So, I mean, you can take that and run with it, you know, a few different ways, but in the biblical story, if you look deeper, the devil is not your enemy. It's the one who said he was, the one who walked up to them and said, hey, I'm God. But see, they were ignorant. They had amnesia. They was just like Hancock. They didn't know. So anybody that walked up to them that was a spirit being or who they perceived to be higher than them could have been, you know, it could have been anybody. So that's almost the same thing as what happened to Black people. We got knocked over the head with slavery, and when we woke up, the white man was God.
It still is for a lot of people. Does that relate back to Kemet at all?
Does it relate back to Kemet? It relates back to Kemet in that, well, see, they didn't have so much the problem of amnesia. Their terror was that they were going to be stuck in the material world. They wanted to transform. That, you know, their main goal was to not come back here, because Earth is the problem. Earth is actually a fault. Being on Earth is actually being in the fallen state. It's actually like hell, because you can experience, you know, there's people right now on the streets, in the cold, hungry, starving, being beaten, raped. There's people right now, as we speak on the phone, somebody is getting raped right now. Somebody is being molested. Somebody is being, you know, killed right now. So we can actually experience heaven and hell on Earth. So this is actually not a great place, because you have that flaw here. And so the ancient Kemetans, their idea was like, I want to come down here and learn what I have to learn, do what I have to do, and then get the heck away from here, never come back. I'm going to transform my consciousness so that I'll be on, you know, I'm on the spirit realm. I'm going to learn all the lessons I need to learn down here and not have to come back here. They were terrified of having to come back.
So do you think
they didn't have much of the problem of amnesia, though, because they had the oral traditions, they had the story.
Right.
What they did, though, what happened to them, though, is once upon a time, we actually all had like super memories, super photographic memories. We had genetic memories. We had, like, the memory. Like, I would be able to remember my father and my grandfather's lifetime. And what began to happen is, over time, as we began to become more and more dense and into the material world, we began to forget ourselves. So that's when you have what's called the monumental phase in Kemet. And they began to build all these monuments and putting the stuff on the walls because they were terrified of forgetting. That's really what was driving them, putting all that information on the walls, because they did not want to forget. They were desperate not to forget, because they actually were beginning to forget. Like, their memories weren't so good anymore.
Right.
They weren't able to remember their father's lifetime and their grandfather's lifetime. And, you know, the stories weren't
having the same effect. So they were like, we better put this stuff in stone before we completely forget ourselves. So, I mean, that actually has been our story for a while.
Okay. Well, we have about 15 minutes or so left in the program. I have two questions for you. I guess the first one is, do you think that the idea of Set, do you think he gets a bad rep now because he's always looked at the evil one, or is he just part of a dichotomy? And if you could touch really briefly on Batman, somebody wanted to know like an overview of that.
Okay. Well, Set, if you understand who Set is, you understand he is part of a dichotomy. That's true. He's part of a cycle that you have. Not only do we have it, but the planet has it, the universe has it, everything on this plane of existence has that same cycle. There is a cycle where you're in the light or enlightened, and then there's a cycle when you're in darkness. There's a cycle when there's order imposed on the system, and a cycle when there's chaos. You could just go through, you know, sometimes your house gets messy, right? Mm-hmm. And your house, you would be like, man, this is chaos. I can't even think in here anymore. I have to stop doing what I'm doing and clean up my house. Once you clean up, now you got order back in your house, and you're able to move forward. So chaos happens every day, you know, every night when darkness falls. That is the cycle of Set. People are afraid of Set, though, because he represents the unseen, what you don't know. And that's where the fear comes in. But actually, in actuality, when you are ready to face the darkness, when you're able to accept the dark part of you, that's actually when you become stronger. Because it's in the darkness where new things are created. And the darkness of your mind is where your dreams bubble up when you go to sleep at night. When your thoughts and imagination can be sparked in the darkness. So the darkness is actually very powerful. But because people don't know what's in there, they're really scared to face it. And what happens a lot of times is because they're scared to face it, what they'll do is it's like a kid with a closet. Like, keep the door closed. I don't want to know what's in there. My kids used to, you know, they wouldn't let me leave the room until I closed the closet doors and turned on the nightlight because something's in the closet. They're scared of things that are in the closet. And until you're ready to face what's in there, what's going to happen is your fear is going to become stronger. And your fear is coming from you. It's not coming from that closet. It's coming from you. So you're making what's in there, in that darkness, a big hairy monster. When you actually go in there, you might even see a big hairy monster. But you have to realize that you created that. You created that big hairy monster. And when you're able to face it, when you're able to say, okay, look, I know, you know, this is something that's in my past or something that's dark about me, and I know I don't like it, and I've been hiding from it for all this time. If I have the courage to face it, though, that's what will make you stronger. And I think the cure for that is really just knowing that. If you know that story, if you're able to understand that, yeah, the darkness can be scary. Yes, that chaos and things like that, it can be scary. But if I'm willing to face it and do the work that I need to do, I can overcome it. That's really ultimately the story of every hero. If they're able, the hero really has to face the darkness within him or herself in order to become that hero. In order to do the things they never thought they could do, they have to really just face that. When they're able to do that, then, you know, the sky's the limit, you know, because usually that darkness is the only thing that's holding you back. And it shows up for us in lots of ways. It's like, I don't think I can do it. I don't have the education. I don't have the capital. I don't have the, you know, whatever. And because we, you know, we give that so much power and we put it in the closet, you know, it keeps us from moving forward. So Set, yeah, he does get a bad rap. The darkness definitely gets a bad rap because the darkness is where your power comes from. Especially us, we cannot
away from melanin. We cannot run away from those things because that's really where our power lies. That's why there's been such a smear campaign against it. That's why in every scary movie, every fantasy mythological movie, it's like, you know, something has come back from the darkness and, you know, the forces of darkness are on the move and, you know, it's like they put this whole forces of darkness evil thing is coming to overthrow the world. What they are afraid of is that same song that P.E. put out all those years ago, Fear of a Black Planet. That's what they really about.
Right.
That they're afraid of that darkness is on the move, like, oh, they're remembering themselves. They're remembering who they are. They're beginning to remember their power. And if we don't stomp them back into the darkness and put the lid on it, they're going to take over. That's what the real fear is. So that can't be a fear for us. But that's why they're going to keep showing you those. They're going to keep showing you those movies, you know, where they kicking darkness's ass, you know, all the way back to hell, you know, where the darkness is the bad guy. You know, they're going to keep doing that. There's nothing else they can do. At this point, a lot of the battle is going on in our minds.
Now, speaking about darkness, I know we were talking about the colors represented in Superman. I've always noticed Batman is kind of a dark character for a superhero. He's dressed in black and gray. And does that have any representation? Or?
Yeah, Batman, I mean, Batman is the story. He's the story of the hero that lives in the darkness. And he definitely draws his power from the darkness. Batman is taking on a symbol of something that represents blackness, darkness, something spooky and scary. The bat, incidentally, was also represented by the ancient Sufi mystics,
mm-hmm.
which were made their way into England and Britain from Africa, and they had a lot to do with spreading masonry. Stories and songs and things like that, things that we think of as fairy tales and the things that they do in these so-called secret societies today was actually introduced by a lot of Sufi mystics. You know, one of the symbols that some sects of Sufi mystics used was the bat. And that sign would let others know that you were enlightened and that you were a warrior. So the bat has that symbolism. And just the character of the Batman is one of revenge. Okay, he set out to get revenge for his parents' death. But he refuses to kill the person who murdered his parents. He also refuses to kill any other bad guy. He'll subdue them. He'll lock them away, but he won't kill them. So actually, Batman understands the ancient science. Or they portray him to understand ancient science in that you can never kill the darkness. You can never kill the bad guy. Why? Because there's always, on this plane of existence, darkness and light. You cannot get away from it. There's always negative and positive. There's no way to get around that. So you can't kill the darkness. There's no such thing as killing the darkness. That's why most superhero characters, until, you know, more recently, the last couple of decades, they're like, we want more realism. You know, it seemed like Superman would have killed Lex Luthor, you know, and just called it a day. There will be no more Lex Luthor. But if you kill Lex Luthor, then you kill that. There's no more story. If it ever gets to the point where light overcomes darkness, and there's never any more darkness, or darkness overcomes light, and there's never any more light, there's nothing. That means that there's nothing, that we've all moved on to the next realm. Because here, you have to have it.
Right.
So Batman understands that, so he doesn't try to destroy, you know, the darkness. He lives with it, and he makes that his power.
Yes.
So that's what's special about Batman.
Yes, sir.
And all the other things, you know, he has the double alter ego, Bruce Wayne and Batman. That's comedic all day, because every comedic deity had a double, at least a double identity. So you have like Hathor or Heteru, is also Sekhmet. She turns into Sekhmet. Tahuti turns into a crane and a baboon. Sometimes he's represented as a dog. You have several other characters. Haru has been shown as a man and as a hawk. So that the double identity of the superhero, actually, once again, that's a comedic thing. Because that's where it gets the roots of the, you know, in the daytime I'm one thing, and in the nighttime I'm another.
Yes, sir. This 2 hours just went by too fast. I know we could keep going on and on forever.
Yeah.
Is there any way that people can find out more or reach you? I know you have a YouTube page and you have videos for sale and things like that. How can people find you or get in touch with you?
Well, I do my lectures under the name Afro Perspective, and I have a website. It's called afroperspective.com. That's spelled AFROPERSPECTIVES.com. And I have some of my videos are actually on my webpage. I'm about to start a new lecture series actually at this place called the Urban Network. I'm supposed to be getting started next week, so I'm going to post my lecture schedule on my website as well.
And is that Yusef Bunchy Shakur's place?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you know what day it'll be on?
It's going to be on Thursdays, and it's going to be from 6 to 8.
Oh, man, that's the day I take martial arts. I might have to change my martial arts days.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be getting started. I'm going to start with a lecture called Black History Before Slavery. So, you know, in schools today, they still teach the babies pretty much that. Our history as Africans in America began with slavery, and they teach them going up from there.
Right.
And I was shocked when I went to my kid's school, and that, you know, my teacher, my son's teacher told me that, like, in my face. I'm like, really? Like, that's where you're going to start? She was like, yeah, we're going to start with slavery and then go up. And so I asked her, you know, well, could I, would she mind me giving a presentation to her class on Black history before slavery, you know, talking about the ancient Nile Valley civilization, ancient West African, you know, civilization, South African civilization, things that, you know, they never teach in the school. And she, you know, she let me do it, so I've been doing this. That's what got me started doing the lectures. And if anybody's interested in having me at their school or organization to do lectures, I'm open and available to doing that. Just give me shoot me an email at afroperspectives.com, or you can call me at 313-288-2252.
And do you? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say that's my number for the lectures.
Okay. Do you have a separate website for the graphic design, or can they just call you if they're interested in having any work done?
I do. They can call me. But I do have a website for it because I do training for graphics and web design as well as providing the service. My website for that is thecreationstationcs.com. Thecreationstationcs.com. And they can email me from there. I also have my phone number on that website as well. And I have some of my work, and I have a listing of the training that I do and the services that I do as far as graphics and web design. And, you know, just real quickly, as people, we have to get into learning how to create media, because that's really like the modern day field of battle right now. It's like, you know, everything that comes on TV, all the garbage that comes out the radio, all the things you read in books and magazines, most of it is not made by us. We need to start learning how to create media, books, magazines, TV shows, movies. You know, we need to start doing more of what you're doing, broadcasting on internet radio and things like that, because we have to have a forum where we can tell our stories. And a forum where we can be free to tell our stories and not feel restricted or constrained by, you know, networks and things that are going to try and dictate what you do and what you say. So in this day and age, it's very important for us to learn how to create media and get training in doing it so that you're not just slapping something out, you know, making something like you were talking about your book cover. You know, even though we all are creative and we know how to write and put out these great stories and things like that, you know, if you want to sell it to somebody else, it needs to be at a certain level of professionalism in order for you to get the respect you deserve.
That's true, and it definitely has made a difference. And we're right at the 9 o'clock hour, so I want to thank you so much for blessing us with your presence on the program today. I've been wanting to have you on for a minute, so thank you so much for coming along.
Oh, you're very welcome. I appreciate you having me, and you know, anytime, I'm here. Just give me a call.
Sounds good. This won't be a one-time thing. Then definitely, I'll be calling you.
Okay.
All right. Peace. All right, everyone, so that wraps up our program, but stay tuned because Brother DJ is coming your way in just a second. They're going to be talking about the state of Black nationalism. Are we building or being destroyed? So we know that's going to be a hot, hot program. Stay tuned, and I will be back with you in 2 weeks. My guest will be one of our favorites, Brother Ambassador O. Omawali from United Front. He will be here and we will be ruining your Valentine's Day. So be sure you come back for that. If you have a woman, make sure that she is there with you so you can get out of buying those chocolates and teddy bears and all that kind of stuff. We're going to be talking about love and maybe even some love warfare. So we will see you then and stay tuned for Brother DJ.